All right, local Beshalomer, start your engines. No, get your questions out and ready to go. Be prepared. I know Janet has 4 pages of them, so just, you know. Okay, so what we're going to do for all of you on the live stream, this is the locals here opportunity. Now, of course, if we run out of people locally to have questions, we may allow some of the live streamers to jump in there. But for right now, it's going to be the locals. And we're going to begin with Kathy.
This is a follow-up from the zone question. It's sort of a life and death question, but not, but it's more on death.
Okay, so in zone 2, we did cover a little bit about end of life stuff.
Right.
By the way, if you guys missed zone 2, somebody did ask this question in zone 2 of, well, you know, do you guys not record it? Could we record it? And, or why don't you record it? And there's a reason. The reason is I want the people that made the effort to be there to get something that you only get if you get to be there. Because, see, if I recorded it, most of you wouldn't show up. I'd have 20 people there, and all the rest of you would want to get the recording. Then what would the whole quality of the event would not be there because the questions wouldn't be there, the people wouldn't be there. And so I could record it. And I've recorded it for myself occasionally, not knowing why, because I'm never going to go back and listen to it necessarily. I don't have the time. But the thing is, it's never going to be published. Because then you would not. It's kind of like if you've ever been a sports fan and your town won't let you, the local station wouldn't play your sporting event because it wasn't sold out. Because they want you to go to the stadium. Remember that in New York? Couldn't watch the Jet game or the Met game or the Yankee game because the game wasn't, well, the Yankees were always sold out. But the Mets weren't always sold out, so the game would be blacked out. Saying, hey, if you don't want to go to the stadium, now, of course, if the stadium was full, then they would show it, right? So what she's asking, we will share a little bit about what happened in the zone too, because her question's a follow-up, but just realize there's wonderful nuggets you miss because the nuggets look, I'm not claiming to be Messiah, right? But Messiah always gave so much of what he gave in response to questions, right? And so I believe he still does that through me, right? He gives me things when people ask, which is why I love doing the Q&As. Because it's like an opportunity to do tons of mini teachings, you know? All right, so Kathy, this is dealing with the, like you said, the end of life stuff or death, okay?
So the question was about cremation versus burial. And I've heard this many times from you, but I just wanted clarification because, So cremation, so my understanding, and I've gone to a couple of interments of Jewish people, pine box, linen, not embalmed.
Right.
Okay, and because of your counsel, which I appreciate it, final expenses is one of the categories that I'm putting savings in to not be a burden.
Right.
To my family, to this family, to you. And so the final comment you made that it could be $20,000 or $30,000 took my breath away. Because I think I would prefer, I'm not going to be here, I get that, to just be in a box and like that. And maybe that's a little cheaper, I don't know. My parents were cremated. Seen too much movies out of Hollywood of people, you know, it's not, nothing is wonderful about it except that you're no longer here and you're sleeping and you're with him. For me, that's my understanding.
Right.
So, but then you said, okay, if you're burned, or let's say all of the Yehudis that were burned in the ovens, okay?
Right.
They had no control over that.
Sure.
But for me to choose volitionally, you also said, well, you don't know what your family's going to do.
But you don't have the volition because you can't make people do it.
But I'm making a plan.
So it doesn't matter.
And I'm paying for cremation or I'm paying for...
If you're going to pay for something up front and it's all paid for, and I know some people here that have done that, well, then you're likely, if you made sure to explain that plan to those who will be left behind to do those things, they're likely to do what you already paid for because they don't have to pay for it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if you're just going to leave instructions and leave the money to do it, they're not going to want to necessarily put that money into what you give them. But if you've already prepaid for a funeral, for a box, for a plot, for whatever it is that you, or cremation, they'll probably do what you wanted if they know it's there because it's already paid for.
Okay.
I get that. But look, we have to stop. Does anybody want this body back?
No.
And if Yeshua tarries like he's been, there won't be anything of this body anyway if it's in a box or if it's cremated or anything else. You're going to end up dust and dirt and whatever anyway. Okay? And whatever essence is actually you is no longer in the body. Okay? That's where you're asleep. So this shell, this vessel, you know, this flesh suit that we have, it doesn't matter what happens to it. Okay? Okay? Now, we should try to take care of it while we live in it, because it's part of how we can have the time we want and need and desire to grow and change and transform. So take care of it while you can. But once you're done with it, doesn't really matter what they do with it, and you shouldn't really care about it. And I've had people say, "Oh no, I let go of all that." You're not going to be alive. You're not going to be aware. You're not going to be like watching over, hovering, and saying, "Okay, you better do what I told you, young man," about whoever it is you left behind to do it. Okay. And so, look, a very good friend of mine passed away about over 10 years ago. And he absolutely didn't want to be cremated. He had very clear ideas of what he wanted to do, but he didn't leave any money behind. And the family members that took care of whatever his end of life stuff was did what they wanted. It's not what he wanted. Well, it's much easier just for you not to want it. Okay? Let them do whatever they do. Live life, focus on life, and once you're done, you're done. What are you worried about what they do with you afterwards? I don't care. Okay? Because it's their problem, their issue. It's about how they deal with the loss of you when you're gone. Okay, some of them may want a big funeral. Some of them may want to do something small. Some of them, if they have the money, may want to put you in a fancy whatever. So what? Okay, you're not going to wake up in the box. Okay, we're not doing a Michael Jackson movie where we're all coming out of the grave and our hands are coming out, from. Thriller or something, okay? It's not going to be that way. So, all right? So does that help?
I'll just continue to wrestle with Abba about it because he's the only one
Look, he's not going to care. I'm giving you that with full authority. He doesn't care how you end up dying. He cares about how you live.
Amen. Amen.
Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Now, as far as caring about how you die, he might care about the fact that if you die because you're stupid, okay, he might care about that. I mean, you can certainly end your life, shorten your life, and cause your life to end prematurely because of foolishness and stupidity. He might care a little bit about that and look at you like, that was dumb. Why would you do all that stuff and shorten your life that much? Because there's certainly people with certain lifestyles end up living 15, 20 years less than they should or could. So from that point of view, but then again, that still goes back to he cares about how you live. Okay? All right, so please, I know this comes up on a regular enough basis. Stop worrying about these things. My gosh, focus on living now. Okay? While you're still breathing, do what needs to be done. When you're no longer breathing, that will no longer be your problem. It'll be somebody else's problem. Okay? You're going to be sitting in storage somewhere, waiting on the resurrection. Whatever essence of you, I believe, goes back to the Father and gets stored waiting for a body. It doesn't have awareness. It doesn't run around doing anything. This is all Millennium and Kingdom Part 4 for all you guys who want it. Okay? Okay? At least what would have been in that teaching if I ever did it. It's not enough information to fill out a whole teaching. Okay? Just realize the book says the dead know nothing. Many verses talk about being asleep. Okay, what's the idea of sleep? That doesn't mean there's nothing happening. I mean, you may dream or whoever, but there's no connection with an outside world. I mean, you're asleep. You're not connecting or interacting with anything. And then you wake up. When you wake up, you have no sense of how long you were asleep except how you feel. Sometimes you wake up, wow, man, that was great. You realize you're only asleep for 2 hours. And other times you sleep 9 hours. You're like, oh my gosh, that was 9 hours? I felt like I just went to bed. I'm so tired still. So you have no sense of the passage of time. I don't think that when you're dead, you're going to have any sense of the passage of time. And at some point, you're going to be put in the resurrected body, whatever that's going to be and how that works. Okay? So, you know, there have been people killed in, you know, we don't even think of it that way so much today. I mean, now we get all, you know, freaked out somebody might have gotten shot or stabbed. Do you know how these people used to get butchered like crazy? Excuse me. I mean, you go back 1,000, 2,000, 1,500, you know, you go back into the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages. All, I mean, when one group of people would come into your town with swords and just rape and kill everybody. And they didn't just, you know, do it in like, you know, just a nice little stab or something. I mean, they would cut arms off, heads off, whatever they would do. I mean, so that body going in a box is better than just being cremated? By the way, even way back then, a lot of the cultures, even in the paganism, took the body, stuck it on a pyre and burned it. Okay. Now, they were doing it as a ritual of how they see the passage into the next world type of thing. We're just basically saying this is more efficient and saves money and, you know, does whatever needs to be done. All right. I know there's a lot of emotion connected to this. Take all that emotion and put it into now. Now, living. Okay? All right, John?
I'm here for Odini because he couldn't be here today. His question is, on our journey to becoming set apart, I'm finding a very thin line between being set apart and isolation. For example, at work, not having much in common with coworkers results often in being quiet and focused on work. He's got a white personality. Can you please shed some light in this regard? As we strive to be set apart to the Father and interact in this life with the world and fellow men, what should this look like considering various personalities, interests, and emotional intelligence?
All right, give me the last part one more time. Gonna come back up here.
It's as we strive to be set apart to the Father and interact in this life with the world and fellow men, what should this look like considering various personalities, interests, and emotional intelligence?
Okay, that part, okay. Look, here's the deal, all right? You've got lots of factors that affect how well and how smoothly you interact with other people. We've got lots of them. Your personality style is certainly one of them. Okay? I mean, some of you, if you go with the colors that we talk about from the color code, you know, if you've got a yellow or blue personality, you tend to be a little bit more social and comfortable doing social and finding interactive ways to interact with people. If you're more on the white side, you're more quiet and it's not quite the easy flow to interact with people. You know, if you're on the red side, you're busy just making things happen, so who has time for the rest of it? Okay? And so we're much more utilitarian when it comes to relationships. But so your personality is going to affect that to some degree. Also, whether you see the world in its many aspects in common in any way. All right? Don't just link it to, I mean, I can tell you I've got a lot of relationships with people that do not walk this walk, and this walk never comes up in conversation. Their walk doesn't. We have other things to talk about. We'll talk about, you know, work. We'll talk about production, like how do you make more money, produce more things, help more people, whatever. We'll talk about sports. We'll talk about music. We'll talk about lots of things that we have to talk about. Relationships are about talking about whatever it is. Some of you love to talk about, especially the women and the people with the blue personalities, relationships. You talk about your family. You talk about these things. But if you don't have that in common, you're not going to find that the relationship really works very well. All right? Okay, I've got a few members of my family I don't hardly talk to very much at all. We're not mad at each other. We just don't have anything to talk about. We're not interested in the same things. Okay? I mean, relationships come out of, there's a verse I love to use. Two walk together. What's it say? They can't walk together unless they're in agreement. So if you and I don't agree on almost anything, guess what we can't really do? Walk together. Are we going to probably be friends? No. Doesn't mean I hate you. I'm just not going to want to spend a whole lot of time with you if every time we talk, we disagree about whatever it is, everything. Okay? And especially if it's an important topic to you. I mean, right now, these days, well, not just these days, for a long time, politics has been like a big deal, right? So, I mean, if you're on the right or the left and the group of people or the individual you're trying to talk to is on the other side of that, and the topic, they could be on the other side of it and it never even come up. It depends on how important the topic is for you. If it's important, you'll be talking about it. Because we talk about what we're excited about, okay? Now, this walk could be something you talk about because you're excited about it. And they may not be. So that may interfere. But if you're a one sort of topic person, that's going to be tough anyway. So if you're at work and you're having a problem interacting with people, it's not because of the walk, okay? The only thing the walk would affect when you're at work really is if the work is trying to get you to do something that breaks Torah, like come in on Saturday or something like that, or do something deceptive with the products or the services that's you know, deceiving a customer or something, and you don't want to be a part of that. But really, at work, you're going to end up interacting with people about things that you have in common, all right? There are people that can understand this with me. For example, I'm not very social. I'm not an introvert or anything. I'm just not very into those, like, normal just chit-chat, social, whatever. But if you catch me with the right topic, we could talk for a long time. We start talking about, you know, the Cowboys and football, we may talk for a while. We talk about music, we talk for a while. We talk about certain things that I'm into and you're into. As long as we're both into it, we can have a lot of a conversation, okay? Some of you are actually very social where even if you're not into it, you can act like you're into it just because you like the interaction. Reds don't do that very well, okay? But that's the whole thing, is that stop making it all, when it comes to our being in but not of the world, stop making it all about the walk. Your choices are all about the walk. How you interact with people is about other commonalities. I mean, do you have other commonalities, okay? And so, you know, Elder and I are really good friends, I think, as well as coworkers, because we've got so much, actually, that we like in common. There's some stuff we don't, but we have a lot that we talk about that's not the walk, okay? And so that's part of why we have a relationship. So those things come organically. They develop organically. So please stop making this an excuse for your social challenges because your walk. Your walk will interfere with family and friends that you had before. They may get all offended and mad because of your choice. I get that. That's fine. It shouldn't affect any new relationship because they should be meeting you as you are now. And you know what? I can tell you from my own experience, and maybe this is just me because I was never Christian, wearing that all out of my sleeve, thinking I ought to preach to everybody. I don't ever get into religious conversations with anybody that's not in this congregation, in our ministry. It never comes up. It just doesn't. Even when they may come up, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm a Messianic rabbi. They go, oh, that's interesting, whatever. And that it doesn't usually lead to some big deal conversation. What we end up talking about is whatever it is that we're, the reason we're interacting. Maybe I met you at a store, at a business. Maybe I met you, you know, doing something that has to do with some other, you know, hobby related or side thing or whatever it is. That gives us something in common to talk about, okay? You happen to be talking to me, you mentioned something about commodities trading. I said, well, I used to do that. We could have a nice little conversation about that because it's something I know about and you know about. Does that make sense? So I don't know why we think that the walk is the reason why we're social lepers. We're not social lepers because of the walk. We're social lepers because we're just terrible at social. Those of you that are social lepers, okay? Because I watch a lot of you that are good at social, and somehow you always seem to be good at social, in or out of the walk. Because you're just comfortable and have an ease with which you can find common ground, things in common that you can agree on, okay? Some of you have a thing that I have none of as a red. You like to hear everybody's stories. And everybody likes to tell their stories. What a great agreement. All right? You got people that like to sit and listen to stories, and others who just love to tell their stories. And then others who just have busier things to do. And you'll take that as rude, though. But not a lot of you have ever seen me out there in social. You'll see me, I look social, but I'm usually either teaching or entertaining in some way because I'll get in a little yellow streak of joking or whatever. But if you've ever gone out, like when we used to go out after our own egg here and then later at night we'd go to like the diner or something, a lot of the time you'd see me sitting there by myself at the end of the table on my phone looking something up or whatever because I don't have that gift of that social interaction. But if you see me interacting, it's because something came up and that person and I had something in common. And it, a lot of times it was either sports or music or something like that, right? And so then the next thing you know, you see me looking very social in a very limited, targeted way, okay? So if you're having challenges at work, maybe it's because you just haven't found anybody or enough people that have anything in common with you, or you're too shy to share enough so you can find some things that are in common, okay? But don't think it always has to be about the walk. The walk is your personal journey, okay? All right, hopefully that answered Odini's question. Okay, Rocky. Nope, Rabbi Tom. Sorry.
Thank you, Rabbi. We get some emails about a subject that was discussed at least twice earlier today. Another subject related to that. That's tallow.
Okay.
When I used to hunt deer, venison is a very lean meat. And when you take the hide off, I hope the animal rights and activists don't get all upset. When you take the hide off, if you want to preserve it, you have to.
All the animal rights activists need to go back and listen to Rebbitson Julie's Torah portions.
Right.
And look at the pictures.
Look at the pictures.
That'll fix all of them.
Amen.
Well, it won't, but then you'll stop watching and go away. All right, so anyway.
But you have to scrape the hide and you get some fat. Mostly there's residual fat on the outside of the meat.
Right.
But there's also fat from chickens and ducks and turkeys and geese and stuff like that.
Right.
So I'm not sure how our older brother Judah addresses tallow. I don't know how they do that.
Look, the problem, but, and again, I have only gotten this from an Orthodox rabbi friend of mine, okay? That when you're taught to do what they believe is the correct ritual way of killing,
right?
Okay, and you get certified to do this stuff.
Show ahead.
They're also taught to identify what's called chelev. Okay, chelev is the fat you're not supposed to eat. Okay, and it has a certain texture apparently to it, and it's different in a lot of different ways. I think that Mark was talking about it, you know, in a very clear way on the Zone 3 when it right. came up in the Zone 3 meeting, because Mark hunts and he does dress the animals himself, so he understands right. that. And so, you know, so the beef tallow we've come to the conclusion is fine.
Okay. All right. And then the other issue is Jell-O. When we were in another congregation decades ago, I said Jell-O's unclean. So somebody wrote to the Jell-O company, and they got a letter. They said, well, Jell-O's not certified kosher, but there's nothing unclean in it.
Well, look, it's just a matter of if the gelatin is coming from a pig source, and most of the time at this point it's probably coming from a manufactured source. Like, it's fake. It's not, you know, it's chemical as opposed to coming from an animal directly. Yeah. But that's the only thing that it could be. Some of the gelatins used to make things back in the day were coming from a pig source. All right.
So I know there's a kosher Jell-O, but it's real high in sugar, very high in sugar content. Yeah. So Jell-O is okay?
If you look at the ingredients and see if it has, if you understand whether, if it's using gelatin, where the gelatin's coming from.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all.
That's the whole question.
All you got to do is source the gelatin.
Yeah.
Or, of course, if it has a symbol on it that gives you the OU or some other thing to let you know it's certified kosher, they've already done that research for you.
Yeah, regular Jell-O doesn't have a symbol. I don't know.
Right. Well, then you'd have to just do some research. Most of these companies out there will answer your questions if you call them up. Okay. I mean, they don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
The reason I'm asking is because we get emails on the subject, and I don't want to mislead anyone.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand that completely.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome. And by the way, how do I want to say this? Don't be judging me too harshly if I seem impatient with some people sometimes who ask the same question that I know I've answered 57 times. I see him getting that way, too. When people are dealing with things like, haven't I already told you this? Haven't I instructed you? Haven't I? Okay, so really, the question of when you say, well, I'm Torah pursuing or Torah observant, but are you paying attention? Because if you're not paying attention, you miss the fact that every year I cover certain things when certain things come up, whether it's dealing with things like I've dealt with the cremation thing many times. Now, if you're new and you never heard it, that's fine. If you've been with me for 10 years, don't tell me you've never heard it. It's been covered many times. Same thing like, do you need to get the crumbs out of your toaster or throw it out? Or how does that work for unleavened bread? Answer that question many times. Just like, there's so many questions that I say, what are you listening to or not studying? Okay? Because, you know, this is not like school where you're looking to get a 70 and pass. Okay? You're looking to get 100, the closest you can. So you got to study the teachings, which is to mean that you want to make sure you understand it as well as you can so you can do what's instructed in there, that you understand all of the peripheral things that may come up regarding that particular topic, like unleavened things. And by the way, a lot of the unleavened questions come, and then I ask the person if they listen to the Passover Q&A, and they say yes, and I say, where's the problem? I know I addressed it in that teaching, okay? And I don't mind answering the questions again and again to a certain degree because a lot of new people haven't heard the questions, but I get a little frustrated with the person I know, but you've heard this. You know what that means? That means there's something, this is for you to work on, something impeding or impairing your ability to receive. Okay? Maybe you've already convinced yourself that A, B, or C is, you know, the way it is, and that I teach it and it's not the way it is, and so you can't receive it. And so your brain blocks that whole section out, and you're like, I listened to that teaching. I don't remember you saying that. Okay? I did the divorce, remarriage, and putting away teaching, and I've had people contact me about the section in Matthew that I spent 30 minutes on in that teaching at least. And then they act like, well, what about this in Matthew? What do you mean, what about? I covered that. Literally, Greek, word for word, I covered it. But if you can't receive, then I can't fix that, right? So remember, revelation is revealed information. It doesn't have any value whatsoever unless you receive it. And then that's still limited in value unless you act upon it. Okay? Because you can receive and say, oh yeah, I know the Sabbath is Saturday and you still work Saturday. But you know, so you receive the information, but are you acting upon it? Okay? Or you still go to Sunday. It's like, even though if I asked you, you know. I was part of a little club or something in college, and in the club building across from us was the Newman Center. So this is a Christian group, right? And Father so-and-so was in there, and he came by, and we happened to, you know, a bunch of us were Jewish at the time. We happened to say to him, hey, come on, you got to admit you guys blew it on the Sabbath thing. He says, nobody's perfect. They know, but they're not acting upon it. Do you understand what I'm saying? So just because you know something, good for you. What are you doing with it, though? That's the parable of the talents. Parable of talents is, I'm giving you, what are you doing with it? Okay? How do you get to hear the words, well done? What do you do with the information? All right? Okay, Rocky.
Thank you, Rabbi. So I'm asking everybody to, and myself, to engage the brain that Yahweh gave us and really listen to what I have to say. I have a few statements I have to say first to try to walk into this question. So thoughts are just thoughts. They are only as important as you want them to be. Whenever we choose not to accept reality, we inflict pain and suffering upon ourselves. The foundation of all mental illness is the unwillingness to experience limitless or limited suffering. Who am I? Who thinks? Not what do I think. Who am I? Who feels? Not what do I feel. Who is aware? Who is awareness of this? What is awareness of this? Who am I? Who sees this world? Not what it is doing, or why or how can I change it? So I know, to me, that the mind of Christ is this conscious awareness. When I'm fully engaged in this amazing mind that he gave me and using it, and then when I'm thinking straight, I'm feeling the correct emotions, because it's all emotion. And it is so easy to let the emotions ride. And it seems like when I do that, that this awareness, this conscious of being, him, he just gets absorbed into that, and my mind just takes over and the emotions run. And it's like, you know, we're supposed to stay in him, and he's gone. I'm just, you know, running on full tilt. The question is how do I keep myself to not lose that conscious awareness, to see as this is the experience, this is what Yahweh created me, and this is what I have to go through, and just stay in it and stay in him.
I get it. I know that makes sense.
So thank you.
All right. So Rocky said some actually really deep things, okay? And they're very simple things, and they're profound in a lot of ways. I mean, you are not your thoughts, you are not your feelings, you are not your body, you're not any of those things. They're all things that you get to experience. But the answer, Rocky, goes back to something I haven't said in a long time, but I've said it and you guys can remember back to it, which is you must begin, see if you remember this, with a hyper-vigilant awareness of yourself. So you almost have to have this out-of-body, looking over your own shoulder, aware of what you're doing. I don't mean like New Agey out-of-body or any of that stuff. I'm saying, but somehow you have to be watching yourself get angry, going, what in the world is that about? Instead of just being angry, letting the emotion turn you into a state of being, okay? Or being happy, or being dumb, or being smart. But when you say that awareness, it has to start off with being outside. See, I can watch you and see something if I'm with you, because I'm not you. I'm outside of you watching. I'm not connected to the emotions you're feeling and the thoughts that are raging through whatever, okay? Somehow you have to manage by practice. This is not something that you just do, okay? Practice trying to be aware, and do this when you're not in a strong emotion. Just be aware of you and what you're thinking, and realize those thoughts don't need to be acted upon necessarily. And wonder, like you said, where do the thoughts come from? Why am I experiencing this, okay? And so it's got to start with you learning and practicing to be self-aware. Self-aware means you're actually an observer while you're actually also experiencing whatever you're experiencing, okay? I mean, I remember many moments where I've been, like, angry, and if I can do that, which I've done, I can say, I'm looking at myself, what is wrong with you? What are you angry? This is so dumb. But I'm caught up in the emotion. But the rational you has to somehow disconnect from that space to be an observer and then start having a voice that calms you down saying, wait a minute, hold on. You've been triggered. Something is running a program in you that has been triggered and you are not in control anymore. So the part of you that's actually has the controls has to always maintain the controls even when something triggers by just detaching a little bit and observing. And then through the observation, now you can make different decisions because you can see, okay, I see what I'm doing. I'm not sure how to stop it at the moment. At least now I'm more aware of it. And I'm not caught up in it quite as much because I can actually have a part of me not be participating because it's observing. Did that confuse everybody or make sense? Okay? And you guys know I've taught this before. You have to be in this hyper-vigilant awareness state of yourself. We're very hyper-vigilant aware of everybody else. Especially those of you that are either nosy rosies or busybodies or whatever you are, right? You're all aware of everybody. What about being aware of yourself? And that's something that's not hard to do with practice. Okay, it's not simple to do to start from scratch, but to start to develop that, do it when it's not anything big deal going on. Just kind of be doing whatever you're doing and try to observe and see, observe and look at you saying, all right, how am I feeling right now? Why am I doing this? Well, ask the questions you were asking, but ask it of yourself when you're not in this triggered, emotionally driven, you know, out of control place where, like you said, I'm off to the races, okay? Because then that part of him that wants to connect with you is out of there. But if you can still maintain a part of you that's disconnected from that, you can still go and vertically interact with him and then grab back a hold of the rest of you. Everybody got that? All right, that might cure most mental health problems if people could understand that, okay? I'm not sure how to develop a program where you could do certain things to practice this, but just take the words I just gave you and figure out a way to be more aware of yourself while you're actually experiencing life instead of just experiencing everything, okay? But be outside and be like the person watching you going, why are you acting that way? Because I'm sure you've said to people in your life, why are you acting that way? What are you all upset about? Anybody go up to anybody and say, what are you all upset about? And they never can answer you because they're all in a raging emotion. So whatever they answer you isn't the real reason. And I usually make those people madder as I go, no. And I try to dig deeper to find out what it is because I know that's not the reason. And I'm a pit bull when it comes to that. I'll keep digging if you let me until we get to the real answer. It's part of how my father and I fought every day for years and years and years. He was never mad at me for whatever he said it was. And I had to push and dig until I found out it was some dumb thing happened 3 weeks earlier that was festering, that triggered, not the thing that just happened that made him all that mad, right? But you guys all have that same problem. You'll explode today, but it's really something happened a week and a half, 2 weeks ago that's been festering and boiling and growing inside. And then one little thing is the last straw type of thing, right? You explode. But you have to be much more aware. If you were aware, you'd realize that thing that happened a week and a half ago, you didn't like it, but you also didn't let it go. And you'd have that awareness and say, all of you need to know, everything eventually needs to be dealt with. Deal with it sooner is much better because it'll fester, it'll grow. It'll become malignant and just take over your body, okay? It'll just spread. But if you would just deal with it, it'd be done with. But you think you're being mature because I could take care of that. I'll just push it to the side. No, you can't. Now, you might be at a point where you actually can push something to the side, but if you're pushing it, it's gone. Not pushing it, and it's just going to keep, you know, poking at you, okay? You have to get to the point where you say, no, that's okay. And if I let it go, I let it go. But then the observer that's you looking over your shoulder has to be like, yeah, but you didn't let it go. Or, no, that's cool. You did let it go. We're good. But you have to be observing yourself to know if you're full of crap or not, basically. I'm just telling you. Because you'll BS yourself. And you'll buy it, too. Okay? And that's where you get in the biggest trouble. You will lie to yourself, convince yourself, instead of dealing with the reality. And all of that, it's not, Rocky, that Yahweh or the mindset of Messiah, that whole thing goes away. It's not that it goes away. There's no place to connect. Imagine that you have all these outlet plugs on you. Like, you know, you go in the wall and you can plug your phone in, you can plug a machine in, whatever. You got all these different things you can plug in. When you get all upset, there's no place for him to plug in. You've blocked up everything. Everything's full. There's no outlet to connect to. So it's not, he's just sitting there like this going, make room for me. I'm right here waiting. But you're just in this place emotionally that you've blocked up and sealed all the entrances. Okay? Okay, you've just sealed everything up. All right? There's nowhere for him to get in, to connect. There's no port to plug into. Okay? But if you have that one part of you that's always kind of out there watching, and that part can be connected. Because that part's not experiencing what you're experiencing. It's watching you experience it. You understand the difference? It all sounds weird, I know. Try it, though. Okay? Because that's the only way for you to actually live in the reality and see yourself correctly. You have to be able to watch yourself do the... I mean, if you watch yourself lose your mind, you'd be like, oh, my gosh, no wonder people have a problem with me. I look like a raging lunatic. But you can't see that, which is why people say, if anybody's ever told you, man, I wish I filmed you, because you don't see it and you can't see it. Like they want to go like this, okay, that's not behaving. I'm going to film it so you can see it. It's like the person says they don't snore. You have to record it because they don't believe you. Okay? I don't snore. Well, how would you know? You're asleep. Goodness gracious. That's like one of the dumbest things anybody ever said. Don't tell me I snore. All right, I won't. I'll tell you, you've got a pride problem. Okay? How's that? Because you're not strong enough in your pride and ego in a proper way to accept any kind of flaw or criticism, you know. But it is what it is, right? So film yourself, so to speak. Watch what you do. And that's okay if you're a little embarrassed when you actually see yourself. But if you're disconnected from the emotion, you can fix it. You can start to make the adjustments. Amen? Amen. All right, Taylor.
So everything that you're talking about, love it. I have before, like, for a lot of my trauma, have recorded myself literally. And the part where you were just like, oh, like, you might scare yourself. Like, I've seen, like, it surprises me the way, like, we can't really see ourselves in our behavior sometimes. And then, as a side note, I also ask people, like, hey, like, no hard feelings whatsoever, but, like, what do you see in me? Or, like, what?
Yeah, and but see, that's part of it, okay? And first of all, I want to say, when you say about filming yourself, I had no idea until I could see the recordings, right? The videos, like when I teach. I didn't know how intense, you know, you're going to laugh at me, how intense I can come across. I didn't. I had no idea what that looked like when I'm like, I mean, I can't imagine. So I have a lot of empathy for my wife, because if I start to get strong about something, I have no idea. It must be the scary face that you ever saw, because I do get very intense. It could be misread as being angry, but I'm like, my gosh, the intensity level, I just, how do you know when it's you doing it, right? And some of us who can get very intense, especially if we're upset, have no idea what that looks like to the other person, okay? And somebody might say, but you scare me. You're like, what do you mean? Well, you were so angry. No, I wasn't. Well, maybe you weren't, but you came across with such intensity. And don't think for a second whatever you're feeling, if it's a strong emotion, doesn't leave beyond just your physical body and hit them in the face. We are energy fields. I'm not talking any new age stuff to you. I'm saying we are energy fields. Anything that has a strong enough energy field, you feel it when you're near, okay? They have that intensity. By the way, that could be someone who's intensely, you know, a downer that just brings everybody down. Why do you think people are brought down by someone who's, because they have an intensity of that feeling that actually extends out of them and affects other people. Affects them anyway. I don't know if it infects them, but it affects them, okay? I used to tell people the story when my karate teacher, way back, I was 18 years old, would walk in the room. You didn't even have to see him walk in the room. You knew he walked in the room. You could feel something different in the energy in the room because he had that level of intensity. You understand what I'm saying? People tell me that they know when I walk in a room. Okay, well, that's fine. I get that. But I only get that because I've experienced it with somebody else. I didn't get it just for myself. I'm like, what are you talking about? Somebody came up to me, I don't know, about 20 years ago and said, you know, you intimidate everybody. I'm like, I'm 5'5", barely. What do you mean I intimidate everybody? But that's just something you project, okay? And if you're not aware of it, then it's hard for you to receive it when someone else says it. So then just like Taylor said in the second part, which is it's helpful to have somebody that when they tell you, you believe them. So she would ask somebody, hey, I won't make my feelings hurt. Tell me what you see. But it has to be someone you trust is going to tell you the truth without any of their biases and spins. And they also, don't ask anybody when they're also in an emotional place. Ask them when they're in a calm place and you're in a calm place, because otherwise their emotion is going to skew their answer because they're not seeing you clearly either. So if I'm upset and my wife's upset, we're just two people, neither one of us is seeing each other correctly. Okay? Doesn't mean we're not seeing it somewhat correctly, but there's going to be filters that either diminish some parts that should have been not diminished or magnify parts that shouldn't have been magnified, right? And when you learn that, you can really adjust a lot better because emotion absolutely filters everything. The stronger the emotion, the more great the filtering. It's going to either greatly magnify or it's going to greatly diminish things that you're experiencing and seeing. Okay.
So my question is, and I'm glad Rocky brought it there because...
Well, all the personal development people are all mad at everybody now because they're doing group therapy again.
My question's going to be like the very end. All the other stuff that I mentioned in between, I'm not really asking about. But
okay.
So So me as a person, I follow a lot of spiritual people and a lot of spiritual practices and things like that. And a lot of what these people teach.
You got to put it right.
Sorry.
There you go.
A lot of what these people teach. But filtering out all the woo-woo stuff when it gets kind of like, okay, I'm going to stop there. But a lot of their practices have helped me mentally. But I have noticed it brought to mind this week. I know for the people that have different religions, like, or following different people, in spiritual community, sometimes they'll call it like prophets, like Buddha and Jesus and all of these other people that they follow. But I'm wondering, a lot of the things that people would come and tell me, some of my friends that I knew a while ago, some people I saw online, they would say things like, some of them would mention, you follow a book that so many people have changed over the years. You follow just one man that, in not just our thing, but in all religions, they'll notice like you guys all follow just one man with a list of practices and it doesn't make any sense of where you're going. I've heard them say like, some people, not to take it in this direction whatsoever, but this was also an example, where they'll say like, I heard it from Black Hebrew Israelites of saying like, you follow the a book made by a white man and they took it and they're trying to enslave you and all that stuff like that. But I was seeing for these people that say all of this, they'll kind of connect to what Rocky was talking about, but it's different. They'll be like, okay, it's a consciousness. They'll see, if you ask them like, okay, who do you follow? They'll be like, okay, he's like a consciousness. He's not really a man. He's just whatever energy is out there. And they'll say that. And then with all of their practices, I've noticed like when it comes to like self-control, like noticing when these people are around people, you talked about the auras, when they come into a room and you can feel them and it feels as if they have like the most powerful auras ever and they have such control over their spirits and their bodies, and noticing like when they get angry or sadness, all the feelings, all the emotions, all the gucky stuff, they seem to have such good control over it. And in my mind, I'm kind of like, it makes sense because they follow all of these things and all of these spiritual practices. And I guess my question is, like, my friends back then when they would ask me, what were the reasons that you follow the person that you follow? But I was in Christianity, so I didn't know what to say. But now, what would you say to a person that was like that, that came and walked in here? What would you say is wrong with their practice? For me, in my head, I'm kind of just like, you seem to have such good spiritual control over yourself that you don't seem to have any impetus to come into what I'm following except to be under something. All so, right. Like, you get
I understand
my question?
What you understand. Well, yeah.
Okay.
So, I think what we have to understand, and this is very challenging, okay? And first of all, you've mentioned the one group you mentioned, but I'm sure you've experienced a lot of the eclectic variety of people when you look at these things. I don't know why they call it spiritual when they're working on themselves, but they want to call it spiritual. I don't have any problem with them working on themselves. I think actually personally, which is why you're seeing a lot more of this flow into what he has me doing, is that I think that the Christianized, even the Hebrew Christianized mindset of using this book from cover to cover over the centuries has gotten disconnected with the other elements of development that we need to have. Okay, so if you go into something like Buddhism, for example, okay, Buddhism is going to give you no vertical structure whatsoever, no structure whatsoever, okay? And we are actually created to need structure. But on the other side of it, you get very little taught by most people, even though Yeshua does talk about it quite a lot, an understanding why we are the way we are. Yet those are the questions that come up all the time. Rocky brings them up all the time, so do a lot of other people. Why do I struggle with being me? And so these quote-unquote spiritual groups that are using sort of this consciousness thing, and they say, well, there is no God, but it's some sort of consciousness, whatever. They're all focusing on the elevating of the human being into something that's in control, at peace, and all these other things that we struggle with mightily. And that's missing in what's taught usually about this book, okay? And that's because the ones who were in control of disseminating all of this stuff had their own agenda, which was mostly authority and control, which is where you got the mainstream church doing mostly control and authority, okay? And so I'm not against the intent of what a lot of that other stuff out there is trying to do, which is to get us to understand. Look, the basic of some of these groups is to understand why we suffer, okay? And so in Buddhism, they call it the Four Noble Truths. It's basically to understand why we suffer. That's a praiseworthy thing to understand. But if you're going to turn it into some sort of religious thing, then we have to be very understanding of, is that where we want to be in terms of understanding our creator, or even if there is a creator, if there's any authority structure, okay? And even they believe in a creation and a creator, but not a creator authority structure, okay? And in my experience, we need both. We really struggle without structure. And many of you, now that you've come under this structure, have found tremendous blessing because of structure, okay? However, the growth, because not enough, that's why people get mad. Why are you talking about all this personal development stuff? You know, Yeshua talked about going off and meditating. Where's that taught anywhere? Okay, there's a lot of things he said that could sound very another culture, okay? I mean, I've got a book that compares Buddha said and Yeshua said. Some of those things are really similar. Because what we end up lacking, what we end up missing, is understanding that we're supposed to do something that they're focused on. Wow, this is going to be stuff that's going to get everybody all mad at me, or they're going to love it. I don't care. All right? I don't. We are to understand two things. All right? Put two fingers up. We understand two things. The first thing is, we are understanding, as far as I'm concerned, that there is an authority in the universe, that there is a structure desired to function in properly. The second thing, which is the thing we really lose a lot of, is this idea of we're told to transform and conform into the image of the sun. How do you do that? What in the world does that look like? Is it just keeping the Sabbath and not eating pork? I mean, has it got to be more than that? Because I'm still a jacked up person, even though I don't keep Sunday anymore. I don't do Christmas anymore. I'm still a messed up person, filled with anxiety, filled with stress, filled with anger, filled with lust, filled with whatever, right? And that's why I'm now shifting from the easy stuff, the mechanical stuff, to focus a lot more on taking you to that next level in the context of the structure, which makes this very different than what you get almost any place else. Because they're all going to tell you in mainstream and in some of these other messianic groups, well, that Messiah just gives you all of that ooey-gooey and changes you and all that other stuff. No, you're still the same person you were before. You have a little bit new information than you had before. Maybe you changed some behaviors. But how do we elevate? The idea in all of these other places is to elevate. They all promote this idea of elevating to this next level. Guess what? That's here. I mean, that's not a Buddhist, Hindu, New Age, Taoist, whatever. It's not, they didn't come up with it, okay? All the cultures came up with the same understanding. We're supposed to elevate. With or without structure is the argument, right? Okay? Now, the argument against structure is a really strong one because it's been done so horribly and abusively. And so that's why then people say, well, why does he talk about all this stuff? Because it's the problem that we have. We fail to adult because we struggle with these very basic things in our human nature and our character and our inability. See, a lot of these other places, as you said, they have a lot of control over their emotions. Not that they don't have any, but the emotions don't just run. And we could use some of that. And I think that basically, when you know what you get a little bit of? And this is really what messed up the Jewish community. Yeshua came and brought some of that part into this, and people didn't like it. Okay? He said, look, it's not west, and it's not east. It's east meets west. Okay? And so I think we can really understand and benefit from, he talks about this. Like when he talks about, why do you worry about things? But he talked about there's a structure out there as well. But we're supposed to, he says, let this mind be in you. What do you think that means? You have to elevate. To think like, not just behave like. I mean, you could do the mechanics and be, you know. I know a lot of people out there that keep Sabbath pretty good and they're not really happy people. And they're miserable and all kinds. It's not because they keep Sabbath or not. They just have too much else jacked up in their life that they've never learned how to deal with. Which is why I know we make it as a joke, all right? When I say, hey, you know, I get like barely one question about Torah observance, you know, when I counsel all week long. It's not a joke. It's really logical. Because the mechanical stuff is not the problem. You guys can listen to a teaching, figure it out, and know this is how you do this, and this is why you do that, and when you do this, whatever. But how do I become better than this thing that frustrates me, this person I am, who makes me miserable all the time, disappoints me all the time, disappoints other people all the time, and I'm supposed to become him? But who's teaching it? Nobody. They're teaching you one or the other. Come over here and mechanically just... You know, well, actually, in this side, it's either do the mechanics or it's believe that everything was done for you. So those are just two issues on this side. This side is nothing is done for you. You have to elevate. Just come and learn our teachings of how to, you know, fix your aura, fix your whatever, get over things, whatever. We're in the middle is the truth. We need structure. We need mechanics. And we need to mature. Only problem is, Christianity has wanted you to not mature. They've completely stunted your growth. Don't get mad at me. Some of those guys are already getting mad at me. The Christian system needs you. Don't argue with me. You know, until well, let's go for the first 1,500 years or so, you weren't even allowed to have a Bible. Tell me that's not proof of my point right there. Okay, you are not allowed to have this book because that way the church controlled the whole narrative. Okay? So you're thinking, I've got it here, I've got it on my phone, I got 15 copies. No, no, this is a new thing. This is a new thing. I mean, look, even if you go back to the King James, it's still 1600. Before that, nobody had anything. So people walked into a church, priest said whatever the priest said, and you just had to kind of buy it or not because you had no way to look it up. Not to mention, literacy was not a common thing. You know, back in Yeshua's day, you had, I don't know, 3-4% literacy rate. 3-4%, not 97 with 3%, not, I mean, 3-4% could read. In the Jewish community, a lot more, at least in the Hebrew, because you had to get up and read the scripture. But you only did that still in the synagogue. You didn't have these things at home. You didn't have scrolls at home. If you were really wealthy, maybe you could have somebody scribe something. You'd have a scroll. Because in the synagogue, there wasn't a Bible like this. They had the scroll of Isaiah, the scroll of Deuteronomy, the scroll of Genesis. Right? They had all these scrolls. So now what do we do today? Some of you are like, uh-oh, this rabbi's going off the deep end. No, I'm trying to get you to elevate. But utilizing this correctly. I didn't say anything that changed anything about the book and what it says. Okay? Read Yeshua's words a lot more clearly. All right? He's trying to get you to understand, okay, that there's a lot more to this. By the way, it's funny. I keep getting myself in trouble probably. Okay. It's a good thing I don't care. Now, so look. When you take the church-imposed strictures and abuse out of the mix, okay? So you take all that out of the mix, and you let people just figure out for themselves what works, you end up with the wisdoms of all of these nations through the ages. We'll call that ancient wisdom that you find in the Toltecs, you find it in the Far East, like in the Taoist, you find it in the Hindu or the Buddha, because they're looking for something that's outside of that structure. So now they have to look and see what works and doesn't work. Okay, and they try to, flail around trying to find that stuff on their own, when really it's not one or the other. It's supposed to be together in some way. So I'm not saying we need to bring that stuff in. I think it's here. You just need someone to show it to you. And so that was suppressed because we don't want the people elevating. We want them controlled. That's what was here originally. Okay? We want them controlled. Go look at the way the church ran things for most of the last 2,000 years. Okay? They didn't want you actually doing anything except being under control. Pay your tithes, come to us. Everything is through us. Okay? And so they set themselves up in a terribly wrong version of the structure. Okay? But then, of course, those of you that lived without structure most of your lives or in bad structure, you know, once you have good structure, how important that is. And it is. But you can't know that without trying it. Okay? Why do the families, most of the families in the world, look like they're a terrible disaster? Because the structure's not there. That structure has failed. Right? Fathers are not doing their role. Mothers are not doing their role. Grandparents are not. I mean, the structure's been destroyed. And so we suffer without structure. But people in the structure doing their jobs properly, which takes elevating. And when we're stagnant, everybody in the structure does it badly, and the next generation does it the same. Because nobody's elevating. Let this mind be in you. We're supposed to elevate from this fleshly dirt, whatever we are, into a Messiah-like place. Is that not what we're told to do? I'm not making it up, am I? But what we don't have is a lot of instruction on how to do that. I'm hoping to keep bringing more of that into the mix, like I've been doing for the last couple of years, right? There's been more and more bringing that out and showing it verse by verse by verse. Excuse me. Did you not catch that when we went through Romans and all the things that Paul was talking about and how much of it was this fight between the law of flesh, of sin and death in our bodies that rage against the law of the creator of the universe and how we've got these things, or that verse that talks about, hey, don't blame, God for all this stuff. He doesn't entice anybody. It's you and your lusts, and you give in. And then when they manifest, you're in all kinds of trouble. In other words, you're not in control. Verses are here. And I've been bringing it out to you little by little by little. And you're not getting it anywhere else. Now, I'm not saying that to brag. I wish you were getting it everywhere else. But you're not. Because what you're getting is some stuff that she liked and she said the rest of it was woo-woo, whatever it was, right? And you don't want all that stuff. Okay?
Yeah, because I thought with Christianity, like back when I was in church, I was a very spiritual person, but when it came to like anxiety and all that stuff and like the body and things I would feel, even with like spreading the gospel and stuff, they would say like, oh, you just got to push past it, but there was never like a control. So I always thought in like the spiritual side, or where those people over there without the woo-woo stuff, they had control of their spirit and all of that stuff. So the only thing that they were missing, you'd say, was structure. That's it.
Well, but remember, the structure points them to a creator who's in charge.
Right.
Okay, which they don't have in their mix, okay? Because there is not an authority at the top of that structure, all right? But also, let's be careful with that word spirituality again, right? We could use it, meaning when a Christian might say that, they're talking about a vertical connection. When one of the other groups we talked about, type of group like out there, I'd say they're talking about you elevating you to match up with that. Okay, both of those are right to some degree, okay? Because we're supposed to connect with, which is what you said you were doing when you were a Christian, but the rest of you still have the anxiety and everything else because you weren't doing this other part of it. You had one without the other. They have the other without the one, right? And so these things are split, okay? And so Messiah came as a reformer, to say, hey, look, Jewish community, okay, you've got the mechanics. You don't always do them, but you got the mechanics. Some of you do them, but you're not becoming Mashiach-like. You're not becoming, you're not elevating. So what did he tell them? Okay, so you don't kill anybody, you don't murder them, but you're angry all the time and you want to kill people, like this, right? That's not elevating. All right, so you didn't sleep with her, but you wanted to, and you dreamt about it, and you talked about it, and whatever. where's the elevation in that? Okay? I mean, good. It's easy to start with the mechanics. Look, you start with a little child. You teach them mechanics first, even if they don't understand why. Don't touch this. Don't do that. Because you want to get some obedience in there. But obedience for a purpose, not obedience to a structure of control, where it's just about the authority person, but as opposed to it's about providing the structure where you can flourish and thrive in. Okay? Look, when I talked about the husbands and wives stuff, and I only mention that because I haven't gotten everybody mad yet. So when I talked about the husbands and wives stuff, I said to the men, your job is absolutely to have authority in that house. But that authority has a purpose to provide the safest environment for everybody in that house to thrive and to become whatever they could have ultimately become. In other words, to provide a safe, thriving, nurturing environment to become all that they were meant to be. Okay? It's not about I'm in charge, so you just better do what I say. And it's not about me. It's about I have authority to keep you from screwing you up, from screwing the house up, you know, because maybe you don't see it at this point. Okay? So I have the authority to bring safety and a place where you can flourish. Man, if you're not providing that for your wives, look, I don't know how much of this I want to take credit for or not, okay? But when you look at the Parsha Pearls program and you look at all the other things that my wife does, it's not any credit of mine except that I provided the place for her to do all that, okay? I didn't give her guidance and instruction to say this is what I want it to look like or anything else. It was already in her. She was doing children's program before we had children. We started in ministry, we didn't have any children, and right away she was starting to do children's programming. But I created a place for that to be and a covering to make sure it didn't go sideways or anywhere else, which really she's almost never needed, okay? Maybe a minor tweak here because she spelled the Hebrew word wrong or something, right? I mean, nothing really of a big deal. But it's because you have to be able to provide that. I mean, if you just want your wife to cook, clean, and have sex with, you're missing the point. No, I'm serious. Okay? And ladies, if you just want them to come home with a paycheck, you're missing the point too. Because you, ladies, now I'll take the other side of it, should be there to nurture and encourage him and provide him with a lack of distractions so he can become everything he's supposed to be. Instead, you load him up with distractions and throw all kinds of stuff on his plate. Oh, but I take stuff off his plate all the time. Yeah, the stuff he doesn't want you to do. I was just taking it off your plate. That's not what I want you to take off. Take off the stuff I want you to take off my plate, okay? But are you understanding how this all goes? And it all has to do with you have to then find a way to develop and grow and elevate, right? Okay, Kurt, Shamish Kurt.
All right, Mark 10:15.
Mark 10:15. Okay?
I'm not going to read further because everyone should know the context, but it says, truly I say to you, whoever does not receive the reign of Elohim as a little child shall certainly not enter into it. Some of this is pretty important right here. What does it look like? I mean, can you explain further this as a child, as a little child? I mean, because they got temperaments, right. They got good side, bad side. What do we
know? No, it's not like, because, I mean, children can really be a handful. I get that. It's what he says here, the first verse that goes into that is verse 14, goes right into it. It says, when Yeshua saw it, okay, because they were bringing little children to him in verse 13, and the tall ones were rebuking them. What he's saying is, let the little child come to me, and do not forbid them, for such is of the kingdom. So when a child, and by the way, I've seen this in most children, they're pretty good judges instinctually, okay? They will instinctually stay away from or gravitate towards. They have a fairly good sort of barometer about that as a kid, okay? And a lot of the trauma you guys have is that your barometer said, no, 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 I need to get away from, and somebody forced you to be with that person, okay? But I think children have a pretty good instinct, all right? And he's saying, these children want to come to me. You need to be like this child. And by the way, the child has no agenda. It doesn't know why, all right? Look, I know that this may be a connected or a sideways thing. There's a reason the children, I don't know what it is, but the children feel very comfortable. They run and tackle me when I close the service. By the way, that is not something that we ever, you know, manufactured in any way. They just naturally started doing that years ago. Just when I come in the room, they run and tackle me, all right? And that's something that children just, whatever, and so that's them, okay? Now, so I get the question then, what does it mean to come as a little child? So a little child doesn't come until they're teenagers and try to tell you how they're smarter than you and what you should be doing, okay? That's not what, children don't do that. Little children don't do that. Little children don't like it if you tell them no, which is okay. That's why he calls them the children of Israel. Okay, because they act like that at times. But a little child is not going to tell you you're doing it wrong and they're smarter than you. Now, they get a little older, they will. But they also have that understanding of needing an authority. They need structure. They come knowing that. Children, the worst children, the ones that have no structure. Okay? Poor structure leads to bad children. Because you're creating an environment. Because I know all these parents today, oh, we don't correct our children. Well, they're going to be awful. And I watch children, and I look at the mother standing right near the child. I'm like, would you just grab that kid and at least take them out of the room? Oh, no, I just let them, like, destroy everything around me, and I don't care. And I'm like, that doesn't help anybody. Okay? Look, some of us who had parents that were borderline, sometimes abusive, sometimes not. But you know what? We appreciated the discipline later in life to realize, you know what? I'd have gotten in a lot of trouble if that hadn't happened. I needed that strong hand to some degree. Okay? I might not have needed to smack quite physically as literally, but that knowing where boundaries are. Okay? Children today do what they do because there's no boundaries. So he's saying that these children are seeking me. They understand I've got authority. They understand that I have whatever they need. Okay? If you do good parenting, you know what your child will do? They'll call you when they have need, not just money, need, where they want guidance, counsel. All right? Both my children still call me when they have need. Okay? But that's because I've taught them that I can do the things that I can help them. That's my role. So Yeshua is the same way. So you must approach Yeshua in that childlike way. Don't approach him trying to fit him into your agenda, into your box, into whatever you think he should be or how he should be. But you come recognizing that's who that is, okay? Your little child, when they first come out, they know you. Come out of the womb, they just need you. And they act different when mama holds them than somebody else. They know that's mama. And until you've done anything to mess with that relationship, meaning disappoint them, attack them, scream them, whatever, they already know who you are and desire you. They reach out to you because they recognize who you are. These children knew who he was. They don't understand what that meant and what it looked like. Just like your child comes out of the womb, doesn't really know what it means to have you be outside the womb now and be mom and dad. Okay? When I picked my son up the first time, he knew me, he knew my voice. Because I'd been talking to him in the womb, okay? And Yeshua says things like, what? My sheep know my voice, right? Okay? So did that answer the question? All right, good. All right, Janet.